The Internet. The Final Frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview with a webcomic artist recorded at SPX. It's SPXplosion on Boldly Going Nowhere. We hope you find it both informative and entertaining. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
All right, well, this is an exciting occasion here on Boldly Going Nowhere.
Extremely exciting.
We have an actual exciting, important guest with us today, Mr. John Allison, the creator of such webcomics as Scary Go-Round and Bad Machinery.
Hello there, guys. It's nice to be thought of as both exciting and important. I've been, you know, one, but never the other. Never both simultaneously.
Well, I'm glad we could do that for you today.
It feels good.
Thank you for joining us. This is Boldly Going Nowhere. It is a review.
It's a huge honor.
Yes.
Huge honor today.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. On this show, we review, you know, movies, music, video games, general nerdy things. And today and tomorrow, because it is SPX, we're going to talk about webcomics. Pretty much an entire episode
devoted to strictly this.
Yep.
SPXplosion.
And you, sir, are actually our first interview.
It's very exciting. It's like a zoo radio format.
Yes.
Indeed. Nice. The morning zoo.
It's gorilla radio.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
Nice.
Lights
up. Or pirate radio.
You know, I'll know to get out of the way of traffic. That's fine. You know, when the traffic report comes in from the chopper.
Yeah. Chopper 4?
Okay. All right, so let's kick off with some questions. Tell us a little bit about your webcomics for those who may not be familiar with you and your work.
Well, the webcomics I do have generally been stories. So I did a comic first when I was maybe, I know, this must have been about 1998. I did one of the first webcomics, which is called Bobbins, which ran for maybe 3 years. Then I kind of took what I'd learned from that and made another one called Scary Go Round, which got to be quite popular.
Yeah.
And that was a series of stories with some of the same characters from the old comic. And, you know, I would run a story for a couple of months or something like that, and I'd do another one and just keep going. I wouldn't often know where the story was headed when I started, and I'd just do what I felt like until I was done, because it was a learning process. And then in about 2009, I kind of called an end to that because I was running out of gas, and I started a comic called Bad Machinery, which is about kids, you know, like a kind of Hardy Boys versus Nancy Drew race-off. You know, with some supernatural elements. It sounds a bit goofy when I say that, but I just tried to come up with like a sentence, like a pitch sentence, so that whenever I had to explain it.
Your elevator pitch.
My elevator pitch, I'd be able to pitch it very quickly. I mean, as time has gone on, I've been able to develop it and take it out of that, because I actually found when I read the Nancy Drew and Hardy Boy books, they were incredibly dry. I'd never read them. We had our own like British equivalent.
I was just going to ask, what's the British equivalent of Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew?
Well, we had the Famous Five, who were like two boys, two girls, and a dog. And I think every British child who read books read them at some point, even if they read one and didn't like it. These were some of the best-selling British books ever.
Was this a talking dog?
No. It was just a border collie.
I was going to say, because that sounds like a precursor to Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, was one of these guys wearing an ascot?
No, although, but it was, I mean, they were younger than Scooby-Doo, because kids in Scooby-Doo were kind of groovers, weren't they? They were kind of late teen groovers. Mm. This was a kind of a pre-teen universe.
Okay.
I mean, they would have been, I guess, the youngest would maybe have been 11, and the oldest would perhaps have been 13, and they never aged. It wasn't like a C.S. Lewis book where they got older.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good age for these sort of detective stories, because these stories about mystery, and like mysteries abound when you're a preteen. You know, right at the age, everything is a mystery.
That's right. And also, there's no nasty kind of sexual undercurrent, if you see what I mean. You know, that's a kind of pre-sexual kind of thing. So there's no, you know, the kids aren't looking at each other, you know, wondering what the hell's going on, you know, while they're sweating all the time.
Yeah,
because, I mean, a couple of years later, they're not really going to care who's lighting barn fires.
No, exactly. But that was what I wanted to explore with my comic, really. You know, I wanted to go from the very simple bit and take it all the way through to the end of school. So, you know, I just go term by term. I do a story for every term.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of, well, in England, it's grammar school. Oh, grammar school is now an outdated notion. There aren't many of those anymore. But it's the equivalent here of kind of maybe middle school and the whole of the high school system, so 7 years. You'd be in that system from 11 until 18 when they kick you out and send you off to college.
All in one school.
All in one, often all in one school. Sometimes the last 2 years you would go to like the equivalent of like a community college, you know, where you'd do the same thing. But most schools, yeah, it's 7 years. So you will see like the real little tots of kids, you know, who don't look like fully formed right the way through to them, you know, the top kids, and they will be essentially adults.
Mm. So since we're talking about webcomics as a medium for telling stories, I guess as an artist and a writer, I guess you might describe yourself as a webcomic artist, as both a writer and
yes, I'm primarily a writer, and then I taught myself to draw, so to sort of support.
So he's a Renaissance man.
A Renaissance man. I like to think of myself as a Renaissance man, a kind of modern day Botticelli.
There you go.
If you will. All
right. Excellent. Because I was going to say, like, if we look at your webcomic is a very good example, as is Questionable Content, for looking at how styles change, because both of those comics are extremely long running, and the visual style changes quite a lot as the comic progresses.
Well, that's it. When I started, I knew comics, and I knew when I started making comics that I wanted to make a comic that was different to superhero comics. I wanted to make a comic that you could read, or you could give to one of your friends to read. You know, I wasn't part of a nerdy crowd when I was growing up, you know, or no nerdier than the people who've, like, you know what Star Wars is, but I didn't watch these films over and over again, you know, but I enjoyed comics. I enjoyed drawing, really, and I used to read comics in quite a critical way. And even when I was a kid, that was what I was nerdy about. I knew what the artists were. I knew, even when I was 7 and 8, I knew who my favourite artists were and who the best artists were, and the ones who were better, and the ones who were like journeymen, which seems odd, mm-hmm. and oddly precocious and weird. But I did, and I can still look back and say, well, I was right, you know, which seems a bit, again, seems odd.
Actually, but, oddly precocious and weird might be a good tagline for your comic.
Well, I think so. Yeah, well, yeah, it's all me, isn't it? You just do everything you have. No, that's what Johnny Carson said to Steve Martin. You do everything you ever knew. You'll say everything that you ever thought in the course of, like, a creative life.
There you go.
Wow.
Well, you mentioned earlier that some of the you were mentioning some of the inspirations were Nancy Drew and well, at least here would be Nancy Drew. What other did you have any other inspirations?
Well, oh god, I've got hundreds. It gets boring because some of them will be people that you're. Audience won't be familiar because they are uniquely British. I liked artists like Ronald Searle. Who did. The St. Trinians movies did come out here, but I just can't imagine that anybody went to see them.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, well, there was an artist called Ronald Searle, who was a guy who'd been in a POW camp in Burma. And this was a guy who'd been through, like, basically hideous physical torture, but was an illustrator. He'd been an illustrator before the war. He went out to war. He got put in a prison camp, and everything he saw in the prison camp, he drew. And then when he came out the prison camp, he drew these like kids' books about this school where the girls would just like torture each other, and he'd make funny the things that he'd seen in that prisoner of war camp with like the Japanese prisoner of war officers, and he turned them into like the teachers at the school. And he's an incredible artist.
Kind of reminds me of Mouse.
It's like that, but I mean the thing was that what he drew, there was nothing left of that tension, and if you didn't know he'd been in there, you just thought he was brilliant at creating these like situations because it was funny, you know, it was a funny series. And I think he's probably the biggest influence on my art style, and just trying to get things into it, and just trying to get like the character, because he's incredible. Everyone who likes art and likes comic art and likes illustration should look at Ronald Searle. He's still alive. He was in a POW camp in the 13th, well, it must have been the 40s, and he still draws for Le Monde in France. He lives in France, and he draws like the op-ed cartoon in Le Monde. He's in his mid-90s now.
Wow,
that's
an amazing
impressive.
Guy.
He's a pretty storied career.
And so he did it like books called Molesworth as well that were about school, and you know, just incredible creation. So he's a big influence. When I think about other things that have influenced it, I just take a bit from everything that I like, and I like a lot of things, you know, across movies. I don't read a huge amount of comics. I prefer to read prose books because I just feel like you're not really getting your medicine if you just read comics, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to do the hard reading to be able to do the writing, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, I should ask though, what is your favorite webcomic?
I love Kate Beaton's work. I love Nedroid. Mm-hmm. Akewood was always big with me, although, I mean, obviously,
Akewood
isn't really sort of ramping out stuff anymore. I think he kind of lost interest in comics as a form. But
yeah, I mean, he made a whole huge post, like, guys, don't expect any new comics anytime soon, which is, you know, kind of, I mean, he seems like an odd guy, an interesting guy, I mean, and, like, brilliant. Like, I've never seen anyone...
Do you know what? He's less odd than you'd think. He's actually sensible, yeah. He's a very sort of stable, centered kind of family guy, but he's like a modern kind of Thurber or someone like that. He's obviously a humorist. He did comics as a means to an end because he could do it in Illustrator. He's not really an artist. Yeah. He can do a bit, you know. Again, he's another guy who sort of learned it on the job, if you like. But he wants to write. He wants to write the kind of stuff that S.J. Perelman wrote.
I mean, I've never seen anyone write dialogue in a comic the way he does.
He's an incredibly gifted guy. I have just so much respect for Chris Onstad. I really do. Yeah. You know, a great inspiration to me. I'm sure I took far too much from his work. But having spoken with him, very, very, very pleasant fellow.
Great, great.
Now, also, we were talking actually before the interview, you actually flew in. Now, do you normally do international conventions, or is this, you know, a one-time thing for you?
I do a few. I mean, it's expensive. It's just expensive is what it comes down to. You've got to sit behind that table, and you're already, you know, kind of $1,000 behind the race, you know? So if you can combine it with a vacation, you know, or maybe stay with friends, make it into a bit of a road trip as well, all those things you can roll into the trip, then you can do a foreign convention. Maybe you can get two into one trip. But it's hard work, you know. It's hard work sitting there behind a table in a place where you're not always tremendously well understood because it's noisy and there are inflections and stuff. Some words you say just won't come across to some ears, so you'll end up repeating yourself a lot as well. It's hard work. So I do as many as I can, but I struggle to fly out to the West Coast. It's just too far and it just takes it all out of me unless I make it a long trip and kind of break it up in the middle. And then you're not at work, you know. I'm not in my office when I'm away for 3 weeks and I've got to make a comic every day.
Yeah. Well, back to a few more specific questions about your comics. In Scaring Around, did you always sort of intend for Shelley Winters to sort of like be the breakout character in this comic? Because I remember when the comic first started, it was more about those other two girls who I can't remember their names now, unfortunately.
Well, there you go. You see, it says it all. The thing was that when I started Scaring Around, it was a spin-off that was meant to run on a site called Modern Tales. That was the site that things like American Elf spun off from. But that didn't really work out for me, and I'd been working on Bobbins, but I developed a nicer art style for Scaring Around. It was originally meant to be a collaboration with a friend of mine who sort of kind of left design and the arts and went on to do other things, so he wasn't able to do it. So when it came to that, I just rolled what I wanted from the old comic, which wasn't as well drawn, into the new one, tried to draw something better, make it better, and you know, just do it, produce better product. And Shelley was a popular character from the old one, so I just thought, well, let's make an ensemble cast. And that whole first story, proper story, was about her anyway, so it was no surprise that she would be in it a lot.
I suppose that's true. Although it's interesting, we haven't really seen too much of Shelley in Bad Machinery.
I mean, you won't see any of Shelley in Bad Machinery. I never ever want to write another Shelley story ever again.
I'm done with this.
If I was going to do more Shelley stuff, I do enjoy drawing her. She's a fun character to draw, but I would prefer to go away and make nice new books of some of the older stories, tidy them up, draw them anew, if you like, and present them, you know, give them to a publisher, say, and say, well, here's this story, and I've bookended it, and it's a proper book. And then, you know, I could do all the Shelley I want, but no, new stories, no. I just think she's a little broad for the way I write now.
Is she still going to do the year-end album reviews? Are you still going to do those?
No, she isn't. She didn't do them last year. I did some. I did them with Esther and the Giant Days cast. And I'm getting a bit tired of doing those album reviews, to be honest with you. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. I used to be a music writer. I wrote for the school paper at university and was the music editor of it. And I did a bit after university. But I just can't find anything to say about music. Or I like it or I don't. It's like, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down is what it comes down to.
Yeah, it's tough to write about music.
It's really hard. Hard to write about things you like without being bland. And hard to write about things you don't like without just trashing something that someone's put their heart and soul into. So, you know, it's a bit of a knife to twist, music writing.
Definitely. Wow. That was a lot.
Yeah, that was great.
Was very, very great.
I don't have any more questions for you. John, is there anything you'd like to plug? Any projects? Any new releases coming out that you'd like to tell our listeners about?
All I can say is just read Bad Machinery at scarygoaround.com. I'm trying to do some good stories. You can go to badmachinery.com and it's all laid out in separate books so you can read it anew because it is stories. You might as well start at the start or pick a story that you like the look of. They're all made to be read in isolation and I like to think I've done my best to make them pretty palatable to the human brain.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, thank you, John. Thank you for boldly going nowhere with us.
My pleasure.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Los Tres Monos production. For more podcasting goodness, check us out at boldlygoingnowhere.podomatic.com.
Check out my podcast, BNS Reviews, at bnsreviews.podomatic.com.
Or if you're into the social networking scene, look up either BS Reviews or Bully Going Nowhere Podcasts at Facebook or Twitter.